This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
The first half of The Last Dance was mostly rehash and nostalgia, but I found last night's finale to be fascinating, with several nuggets that I hadn't heard before, such as Michael eating bad pizza in 97 instead of catching the flu. And in the final 5 minutes, we learned Jerry Reinsdorf went over Jerry Krause's head to tell Phil Jackson if he wanted to return to Chicago, there would be a spot for him in 1999. Michael was then shown on an iPad the clip and said it was maddening to retire at his peak and that the entire team would have returned on one-year deals if Michael and Phil Jackson were back. And it's a shame because taking Michael at his word, knowing his teammates better than I do, and granted, it might be a big stretch to say Scotty would come back because of how wide the gulf was between what he wanted to make versus what Houston ended up offering him. Dennis Rodman, he's leaving finals games to go team up with Hulk Hogan and NWO. I don't know how committed he was at that point in his career, but taking Michael at his word, he knows those guys better than me. The Bulls would have been set up to win their seventh title in 1999. I've always felt that way, and hearing Michael describe the situation makes me think even more. It affirmed it for me. If the Bulls came back as they were constituted in 98, that following season, I think they win their seventh title. For one, it was a lockout season the next year. There's two schools of thought on this, though. One school is less games. I think it was a 50-game schedule. 32 less games. That's going to benefit an older team, like Chicago undoubtedly was. The second school of thought was this. It hurts an older team to have 50-game schedule and less breaks. More 3 games in 4 nights. More back-to-backs. That is going to hurt an older team more than even playing a regular 82-game schedule. Out of those two options, I think it's more an advantage than it is a disadvantage, just with the Chicago team. Because Chicago, they've been to, at that point, 3 straight NBA finals. Before that, they made it to the Eastern Conference semifinals. That group was tired. The NBA offseason, it's short. If you're playing all the way until the end of June, and things start firing back up at the end of September, early October, it's a very short offseason. And when you stack up those seasons back to back to back, it really drains you. I don't think it's a coincidence. The Lakers don't make the playoffs last year, and LeBron is having his best statistical year we've seen in the last 3 or 4. 17th year, he's crushing it. I think a reason why, he finally had May. He had June. He had those months off that he normally didn't have. So with the lockout shortened season, they would get an extended offseason break to get their legs back in a way they haven't had, or Michael didn't have, until he decided to dive into baseball. So I think it's more an advantage than it is a disadvantage. Also, when you're in a situation where things are in flux, that being a labor dispute, I trust teams that are older, I trust teams that are more experienced than younger teams, even the one that ended up winning the finals in the San Antonio Spurs. More on that in a minute. Looking at the Eastern Conference, the New York Knicks went to the NBA Finals that year. Chicago owns the Knicks. Michael owns the Knicks. What makes you think if those two teams went head-to-head in the playoffs, the Knicks would have had Chicago's number for the first time? Unlike LeBron or any superstar we've seen in the NBA the last 3 decades, Michael wasn't just great. He was intimidated. People were scared of Michael. They advised their teams, don't talk to the guy. Don't talk to him or you're going to give him motivation. You're going to piss him off. Heck, when you don't even talk to him, you're still going to tick him off. Remember, it was the 96 finals, George Karl, he doesn't talk to Michael. Michael used that as fuel, according to Ahmad Rashad, the entire 96 finals. So you're screwed if you do, you're screwed if you don't, one way or the other. Michael owns the Knicks, and that would have continued in 99. That Knicks team, here's the thing that people forget. Yes, they went to the finals and got crushed by the Spurs. They were also an 8 seed. 8 seed Knicks went to the finals. So Chicago, I think, walks through the Eastern Conference, gets back to the NBA Finals, and at that point, the Lakers, obviously they're not going to have Phil in this circumstance. He's going to still be with Chicago. They're not quite ready yet. Kobe's not quite at that point with Shaq. The Spurs, they took care of the Lakers. Aaron, check this for me. How quick was that series in the Western Semis or the Western Final in 1999? Lakers-Spurs. I want to say the Spurs won that in 4 games. It might have been 5, but I think the Spurs took care of the Lakers in short order. So it was a dominant San Antonio team in the playoffs that year, but they had not been a champion yet. I think that matters. Tim Duncan, he was only in his 2nd season with San Antonio. You expect me to believe he goes into the finals and they're facing Michael and the Bulls off 3 straight and they're going to have the same confidence they would against the Knicks who haven't won since 72? Hard pass on that. I think Chicago finds a way because they were playing at a level where it wasn't just physical. It was mental how they went through games, how they took care of opponents. And I think they would have undressed a San Antonio team that was leaning on a second-year player in Tim Duncan in addition to David Robinson and guys who, quite frankly, have not won at that point. Also, a key player on that Spurs team, Steve Kerr, who Michael thinks would have returned to Chicago if Michael and Phil Jackson were back. Yes, Aaron.
99 Western Conference Finals was Blazers versus Spurs. And the Spurs did win in a sweep.
But right before that, then it might have been, I think it was the 2nd round. I'm pretty sure the Spurs dispatched the Lakers at some point during that playoff run. I couldn't remember if it was the semis or if it was,
the conference final.
How quick was that series? 4 or 5 games?
That series was also a sweep.
Yeah, so they swept the Lakers. The Lakers just weren't at that point yet. Robert Walsh is the producer of this show. Aaron Gabriel is in studio. Obviously, you can tweet the show at SportsUpGiant, 336-777-1600 is the phone number. I want to spend a lot of time on the finale of The Last Dance. I thought it was very good. Give a lot of credit to the people who put this together. I read last night, episode 10 wasn't finished completely until last Thursday. Remember, this wasn't supposed to air until next month. Jason Hare, without being with his editors in person or his production staff, finished episodes 9 and 10 as episodes 1 through 8 were showing. It really is an impressive feat. I know there are some people nitpicking it. Perhaps we could get to those people in a little over 5 minutes. Ed Hardin will talk about NASCAR's return in 20 minutes. But there's a headline today in Football Morning in America, the column that Peter King took from Sports Illustrated to NBC Sports. The headline was this: just figure it out, bro, how the NFL's most challenged team is handling distance learning reality. That team, Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers. I've been saying this for the last few months. Now one of the foremost authorities on the NFL, in the media, is saying it as well. Carolina is going to be hurt more than any other team because of COVID-19. There is not a team, from a football perspective solely, that's more upended, going to be harmed more than the Panthers. They have a first-year NFL coach. First-year NFL head coach in Rhule. You got rookie coordinators. Joe Brady, Phil Snow haven't been coordinators at the NFL level yet. Joe Brady, this is the first time he's even a full-time offensive coordinator at 30 years old. That means you can't really implement the offense the way you want to. You can't get your system in as you plan to. There's no head coach on staff. Joe Judge in New York, he hired Jason Garrett to be his offensive coordinator. I think that's a significant thing. Carolina is the only team in the NFL to have a first-year NFL head coach and also a new quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater, we learned in the piece, he's been throwing to receivers, just not the ones he's going to be playing with in Carolina. He still hasn't met Robbie Anderson, hasn't spent time with Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore. They've still been unable to get together. So not only is he trying to learn a new offense, he hasn't been able to get with his wide receivers yet. That's tough. And Carolina is an incredibly young group with a new leadership core. Four of the five captains from last year's team are gone. Colin Jones, special team, Cam Newton, quarterback, Greg Olsen, Luke Kuechly, they're all gone. The only captain returning is K.K. Short. K.K. Short is also one of four starters on offense and defense who are older than 30 years old. 18 of the 22 projected starters at this moment are in their 20s. Young teams, kind of like I was mentioning with a work stoppage in 1999. I'm going to favor more experienced teams in those circumstances. People who have more experience, they're going to be better in those spots. Carolina does not have an experienced coaching staff. They have a new quarterback, and they have one of the younger teams in the league. And let's add this to boot. They're in a division with tenured coaches and future Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Bruce Arians and Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Breeze and Peyton in New Orleans. And Dan Quinn and Matt Ryan in Atlanta. So Carolina, they're the exact opposite to those teams. And I think as Peter King, he's outlining in this piece this morning for ProFootballTalk.com, Football Morning in America, Carolina is going to be hit hard when things actually begin to open up. They're going to be playing catch-up in a major way. It's why I believe Carolina is very much in the mix to try and land a Trevor Lawrence next year, to land potentially the number one or number two pick to try and get the Clemson quarterback. Coming up, there's evidence that The Last Dance is going to play a significant part in Michael Jordan's legacy. This is The Drive.
Here comes the life of the party.
The Drive.
Corrupting the minds and the hearts of our children.
With Josh Graham.
Program for low expectations.
On Sports Hub Triad.
Woo!
If you're wondering what effect The Last Dance has had on Michael Jordan's legacy, look no further than this poll of 600 NBA fans in wide age brackets that was revealed after last night's finale. I'm a little surprised by this because Michael, I do think he is the greatest of all time, but some of these categories, LeBron is clearly better than Michael in, and LeBron doesn't even sniff Michael. I'm looking at some of these. Better sneaker for fashion, 79%. Mike, 21%. Bron. Okay, I could buy that. Better sneaker to ballin'. I think those two go hand in hand, 77%. Mike. Pick for a game-winning shot, 76%. Mike. Even though I think LeBron actually is more efficient when you look at the shots that he's hit at the end of games. I think the perception's that Michael never misses a game-winning shot because of which ones are thrown in the highlights. Comes through in the clutch, 74% Mike. Spectacular to watch play, 74% Mike. Better player overall, 73% Mike. Now, this is where it's getting stranger. Better passer, 59% Mike. Better passer than LeBron, really? Better defensive player, 59% Mike. Positive impact off court. How about this one? Positive impact off court, 62% Mike. LeBron's the guy who's doing all the social activism.
How do you explain that?
Michael's the guy who punches his teammates in the face. Positive impact on court. How about this one? Who would you rather have as a teammate? Mike should not win in this category, right? 63% Mike.
I don't know, man. I like having somebody that pushes me, so maybe LeBron would be more passive.
Oh, it's not pushing you. It's punching you literally in the face.
Yeah,
and
I
he
guess
would.
You're right.
Michael would punch you in the face.
Oh, 100%. But then also,
he would not punch Aaron. Aaron would be off the Chicago Bulls after maybe two practices. I give him two practices because he stands up to Jordan and then he starts throwing hands, and you can't throw hands at Michael Jordan and expect to remain on the team.
It's funny you say that because my lady mentioned the same thing while we were watching it. She looks over and she's like, "Babe, I don't think you could have done this."
Yeah. So I think the documentary, would these numbers have been the same before the documentary showed? I don't think so. I think before the doc, before the NBA season was halted, we're talking about LeBron potentially winning the MVP. The Lakers are riding high. There are people who don't remember watching Michael play. I think it's a lot closer, and I think LeBron wins in categories. The closest that LeBron got, oh my gosh, this is so disrespectful. The closest LeBron got in any of these questions, who do you trust to pass you the ball? 57% said Mike. Why would you even want to win in that category? Who thought that would be a good one to have? No, we're not just going to do best passer. We're going to do, who do you trust to pass you the ball? Come on.
Yeah.
On Twitter at SportsHubDry at 336-777-1600. I do think the documentary is going to be a significant part of Michael's legacy now. It satisfied our appetite during a time with no sports. In a time where the NBA Finals would have been getting set to start. Right now, I think we would have been at the conference finals stage. This doc came out, and there were high expectations for it. Probably higher than any other doc I've ever seen in my lifetime. It exceeded those. It really did. It never lagged. Everybody who was in it was throwing heat, from Carmen Electra to Roy Williams. They're all in this, and they were all fantastic. I don't understand really the knocks of it. Oh, the sequencing was confusing. Then don't watch, okay? Like, I think Lifetime was having a special on some Jennifer Love Hewitt movies. You could give that a run if you're going to criticize the sequencing. Imagine being that guy today. Oh, man, I didn't think the documentary was that good.
It was kind of hard to follow.
The sequencing, because I was looking down at my phone and missed the part where it went from 98 to 93.
It was important trade
details.
It's
just so hard to understand where exactly this was going.
And who is Michael?
This also wasn't real journalism. Not real journalism at all. What are we trying to do here? Are we trying to expose the Nixon administration, or are we talking about a basketball player? Holy bleep, man. Like, also, I thought, yeah, it wasn't great journalism, to use the air quotes, but it was a very important piece of filmmaking because I think what it was, it's Jordan's side of the story. That's what it is. It's Jordan's side of the story. We now have him on record telling us he did not have the flu in 97, that he ate bad pizza. It's amazing. We'll get to that later. Let's put a pin in that because I want to discuss that at length. Maybe after talking to Ed Hardin, we could get to that and discuss that at length. But we also learned that he wanted to return. He didn't want to retire. We learned a lot about his dad. He spoke on record about the gambling and the rumors that he was suspended by David Stern. Stern was on record. The baseball stuff. It's the greatest individual career in American sports history. This is Michael's side of it. And also, he's probably the toughest athlete to get in touch with, period. Hayes Permar's a friend of mine. We were both working together on the David Glenn Show when Dean Smith passed 5 years ago. And we've been working hard. He even told me, anytime someone gave a good answer about Dean Smith, clip it, because whenever he passes away, we want to make sure we're ready. And we had our guns loaded. We had Roy Williams on the show, and the two long shots that we were trying to go for, Hayes was trying to go for, and he had connections to try and make it happen, Barack Obama and Michael Jordan. He got Obama. Obama, he got Obama on the show to talk about Dean Smith. And here's what's amazing. armed with that, never really taking a significant jab at Jordan because we always understood there's no way he's going to come on the show. Dean Smith had passed away, statewide platform, and I remember that he reached out. He reached out to his people, Michael's people, and said, hey, Obama's in. Do you want to come in as well? And they said no. So if you can't even say, hey, we got the sitting president at that time on the show to talk about Dean Smith, you're never going to get in touch with Michael Jordan. You're just never. You're never going to be in the same place as Michael.
The biggest part of that is I got to know where Hayes' contacts can get him to Obama.
Okay, it's easy, actually. He had a sister who went to the White House because of her medical prowess, really accomplished doctor. And also, Carolina people knew Obama because he shot hoops a few times in 2009 after Carolina won.
Wow, that's awesome.
So it kind of worked out that way. It was pretty cool. And Roy Williams was on the line when he called in. So we had to do the awkward thing. Everybody wanted Roy that day because, of course, he was Dean's assistant. And I just remember DG, he chimes in and goes, Roy, you know, we'd love to have you at any other point, but the leader of the free world is literally on the other line. And Roy said, you're making the right decision. So I do think this documentary, it's significant for Michael. We're going to remember this pandemic as the time we came together to watch Michael and his entire career. And I don't think it's a coincidence. It drops while LeBron's at his peak. Now, I know, speaking of Hayes, he talked to Jason Hare, and Hare was adamant that it was just coincidence that he agreed to do this as the parade's happening for the 2016 Cavaliers. But you can believe what you want to, and I believe that Michael just wanted to remind people what he was. Kind of like last year when Troy Aikman was getting heat. Oh, man, you're never as good as Pat Mahomes was. And he said, yeah, remind me when he gets one-third of the rings that I've won. Well, it feels like Mahomes can remind him of that now, but that was last November. Before we get to Ed Harden, let's do NC Dinos Daily. Let's see what's happening with our beloved NC Dinos.
On Saturday, I swear, they don't know how to do anything easy. The Dinos are down pretty much the entire game until the eighth inning. At the top of the eighth, they take the top off, score two, and end up beating the SK Wiz. And I don't see
our Wiz is terrible.
They're awful. They've won one game this whole year. And if the Dinos would have lost to them, I would have been very upset.
So the Dinos at this point, 9-1 on the season.
And something must have happened with Park Min-woo because he only had one at bat.
Needs a night off, man.
I hope that's what it is, and I hope he doesn't have an injury. And actually, I'll be able to tell you that once we get to the next game. Then the Dinos were tired of it, man. They just unloaded on the Wiz in the second
half. They whizzed all over them.
They did. They scored three runs in three separate innings, 12 hits. They end up beating the Wiz 11-5. Park Min-woo, four at-bats. He was back.
He's back.
Two runs, two hits, one RBI. The guy cannot be stopped. And I feel like I can't catch a break. I'm always looking for Mike Wright. Did he pitch Saturday?
He pitched, I think, last Tuesday or Wednesday.
So is that about the time I can expect him
week? Once a week he's going to throw.
Is he not the best pitcher on that team?
I don't know. Probably not.
That upsets me, man. What's the chance we could get Mike Wright on the show?
I can make it happen.
I would love to hear you talk to him about KBO baseball and just the culture over there and what's it like.
I could probably make that happen.
We have
Adam Amin on the show today. And he is a noted NC Dinos fan.
And you know, he's my favorite guest that we have out of everyone. But like I said, NC Dinos take care of business, take care of the Wiz. They win 2-1 on Saturday and 11-5 on Sunday.
10-1.
Let's go.
The 10-1 NC Dinos.
You can look at this photograph. Look at this graph. Look at these standings.
I'm fascinated. I was thinking about this last night in the sports context. With things being lost because of coronavirus, which of these things do you think are likely not to return in the new normal of sports? I was thinking about that watching NASCAR and reading a column by the award-winning columnist from the Greensboro News and Record, Ed Harden, this morning. Ed's going to join the show to discuss next. Robert still doesn't have access to ESPN. So it's an amazing thing. I'm telling him what's happening in The Last Dance. Like just seconds ago, literally before the microphones came on, I'm like, Michael asked for a piano in his room after winning the 98 finals. And Robert just excitedly said, "Oh, wait, Michael was playing the piano?" Yes, he was. We were all watching this. Probably like 6-7 million people, except for you, who produces a sports radio show, for God's sake.
All I'm saying is, why would I watch it when I can come into work the next day and have you give me a total synopsis of the entire episode?
We will break down elements of this in 15 minutes, but we're now being joined by Ed Hardin, reading his column today on NASCAR's return in Darlington yesterday. It had me thinking, what are some things we've lost due to coronavirus that we might never get back in this new sports normal? And I even thought about it last night. I was in Old Salem grabbing some ice cream, I think at Little Dipper, which is a place I like to frequent during the summer. And before the Last Dance started, I was just thinking there, sitting there thinking, what things are we not really even thinking about at this moment that we might not get back 2-3 years from now, hopefully when a vaccine is found? When you started writing this column, which you can find at the Greensboro News and Record, greensboro.com, Ed, what are some of those things that came to mind for you?
Well, I mean, the most obvious one is I'm sitting on my couch covering a race. So it's not a foregone conclusion that when we come back, sports writers are just going to pick right up where they were and start going to events and having access to players and coaches and whomever. That might not ever happen again. So, I mean, that's the big one for me. I mean, it's my profession. So I just think there are any number of adjustments being made right now by sports information directors or media people in general. Like, why do we go back to doing it like we've always done it? Why not just change it right now? And I have a feeling that's what's getting ready to happen.
Let me ask you this, though, because there are people who hear this and think, oh, boo-hoo to the media. But if we don't have access in the locker rooms to these players and don't get to know them, how does the audience lose out?
Well, they're going to get spoon-fed by the organizations themselves, who are just going to put out statements and put out, you know, I don't know, Zoom interviews or something. I just don't think we go back to the way it was. I can't see us going into a locker room anymore. I can't see us up front and close and personal with anybody before or after a game. I just think those days are going to be over.
He's on Twitter at @Ed_Hardin. Read his stuff in the Greensboro News and Record. Getting to the positive stuff, the race that you were covering from your home in Darlington, I thought it was a big win for NASCAR. It was a very tough thing to put on. I know from a television perspective, having people who aren't on site broadcasting is a difficult deal. But I think NASCAR really became a leader yesterday with the way they had talent and racers with masks on and distance and being safe. And I thought that it was a fascinating race with good storylines. I thought it was a big win for NASCAR. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely it was. And therefore, for sports, maybe. I think a lot of people were watching that race to see if NASCAR could pull it off, to see what the images look like. And I thought it was very positive. I thought they had thought it out. They had an excellent plan. I don't know how much of the background you knew about it, but it was a one-day event. Nobody was spending the night in Darlington.
Yeah.
And they arrived. They were tested. They basically just went straight to their cars, jumped in, started the motors, and took off with no practice or qualifying. So it was just a way that they had to do this one, but it's the way that we're going to have to run sports from now on.
I think what was even crazier than that, Ed, you said they were tested. I think it's just important to clarify that it wasn't even COVID-19 tests they were given. It was what they described to be health screenings, where they just monitored their temperature, and they said out of the 900 people that they had done health test measures for coming in, that nobody had an extreme temperature at all. So they feel pretty confident that they're going to be full speed ahead for Wednesday night and heading into Charlotte on Sunday. What's the biggest storyline in your mind, now that we have this one race in the books, as they transition from Darlington to Charlotte Motor Speedway?
Well, I mean, the thing that jumps out to me right now is that all these races are within driving distance of Charlotte, where all the race teams are. And it's almost like a throwback sport. It's back to the way it was in the earliest days when all the tracks were in the South and they were all within driving distance. And a lot of people think that's what we lost as NASCAR grew and grew and grew. And here we are, we've gotten it back. And the irony is the fans can't go now. So you know, they got their spark back, but they're not going to the races. So I think going forward, we're just going to see, all right, we did it in Darlington. We're going to do it in Charlotte. Then we're going to do it in Atlanta, Bristol, Martinsville. And then they're going to start driving a little bit. Then they're going to go to Talladega. And they're going to go to Homestead. I don't know exactly what order, but they're going to start pushing the boundaries a little bit. And then we'll see. Does some track somewhere say we're doing it with fans? You know, we're going to separate them, but we're going to try this. I think that's what all of sports is going to start doing now. NASCAR gave them the blueprint. Now we'll see if the rest will follow.
Ed, tell me about your last catch you had out on the lake.
Let's see. It's been a while because I'm giving them a break right now. They're spawning. I don't fish when they're on the beds. So, and I'm getting a new boat tomorrow. So,
oh my goodness.
I'm in a transition.
Put that, hold one sec. Everybody calm down. Put that up on the ESPN scroll. Ed Hardin of the Greensboro News and Records getting a new boat. Give me the scouting report on the new boat.
Well, it's an 18-footer. It's a big old boat.
Whoa.
And we're ordering it from a company in Fayetteville. We don't have to go get it. They're going to bring it in my driveway. And I guess they're just going to dump it out in the yard. And then, of course, it's going to rain for the next 5 days. So it's going to sit there in the rain. But, yeah, it's a big day here tomorrow. You ought to come and watch.
I'm telling you, Ed, we don't have many sports actually to talk about aside from NASCAR. So I'll sit in your 18-footer. And I will maybe describe the next day what the heck you catch. I'm down. Some point this summer, we're doing that, Ed, okay?
All right. Open invitation.
There you go. That's Ed Hardin. Thanks for the visit, buddy.
Thank you. See you soon.
He's on Twitter at @Ed_Hardin. Just tell me the proper way we should go about doing this. Like, because we have a lot of things that we put pins in that we haven't really revisited yet. Like Stan Cotton, I've been talking to Stan about going to his home, of course, safely, and watching the Outlaw Josie Wales. I've never seen that before. Huge Clint Eastwood guy. Maybe we'll even do a double feature. Some point this summer, we're going to make that happen. If I don't do it when we don't even have sports to talk about, then it's probably never going to happen. So let's commit to doing that. And also, I'll spend a day, maybe a weekend day, on Ed Hardin's boat. And then we can recap that. I can give you a full recap.
Have you ever been fishing before? Or has it been
a while?
Of course.
I have a lifetime fishing license.
Nice.
I've gone fishing a half dozen times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a smart thing. When you have a kid, if you think that they're going to do something like that, you might as well buy I have a lifetime hunter's license, lifetime
fishing license.
It's the first
thing my grandfather got for me before he died when I was one. He got me a lifetime fishing license.
How long ago has it been since you've been fishing?
Last time I went fishing, I think it might have been when I was in Mexico a year and a half ago.
Fun.
We didn't catch anything. They said that there were going to be tons of fish and they were going to be biting everywhere.
Sometimes those are the best days.
And you know what? None of them bit. And then I talked to Ed about it and Ed said, oh man, you got scammed, man. You got scammed. They weren't going to bite this time of year there. They just weren't going to do it. Like, Ed knows everything there is to know. And in college, I roomed with somebody who now does broadcasting, who's actually a Winston guy, who does broadcasting on bass fishing. He was a professional bass fisher. So I feel like I have enough people around me who know enough about it that I could be a decent fisherman.
To succeed?
Yeah, and we have a mutual friend in Greenville who is a sports editor over there who is a big fisherman as well.
God,
so,
I wish he was around here.
Right.
I miss Nate.
Yeah, so we should be better at that. But I'll commit to that. At some point this summer, let's do that. Maybe next month.
We can go fishing sometime. We don't have to do it with Ed. You can let me know.
Oh, no. Let's go fishing with Ed.
Okay. All right. I'm does sure have an 18-foot boat, so.
Yeah. Do you want to come along with, too?
Absolutely.
You, me, and Ed. That just sounds like a really fun day.
It sounds like a great B-plus movie.
You, me, and Ed?
You, me, and Ed, and it's just us on this boat. It runs out of gas. We get trapped in the middle of the lake. It sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds great. It's like you, me, and Dupree. It's you, me, and Ed. Different movie. All right. Robert, again, has not seen any of The Last Dance. It's ridiculous. We'll break down the 98, or make it the 97 pizza game, and Dennis Rodman's NWO performance next on The Drive.
Sports Talk.
Saluting a fellow sportsman.
If you're talking about it,
I'm talking truth.
We're talking about it.
Who are you talking to?
Sports fans everywhere.
This is
Radio.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
If I asked you what drew more ratings yesterday, The Last Dance or NASCAR returning on Fox, what would you say? Because Austin Karp on Twitter, who's a Sports Business Journal reporter, just posted the numbers now as they're coming out. What would you say, Robert Walsh?
I would have to go NASCAR, I guess, just because it's a live sport.
Aaron, what would you say, NASCAR or Last Dance? What drew more viewership?
It had better be NASCAR.
NASCAR drew 6.32 million viewers. The Last Dance pulled 6.34 million viewers across ESPN and ESPN2.
Pathetic.
It's not pathetic, I don't think. I think Michael Jordan got another win. Like, Michael took it personally that NASCAR was going to return the same day as his finale, and he took it personal the same way he took it personal that Reggie Miller breathed, and he took it personal that everything Jerry Krause did. Like, those memes are the greatest, where it's just like, Jerry Krause, he says that he's Team Edward, and then Michael Jordan's like, well, I took that personally. I'm more a Robert Pattinson guy, or I'm Team Taylor, or whatever it is. That's like a 12-year-old reference. I don't know why I'm going that route.
You're reaching really far back.
Reaching very far back, but it's also just a meme I saw from last night. Let's get to the things that we need to discuss most from The Last Dance finale, starting with the flu game is a big fluke. It was not the flu game. It was, in fact, bad pizza. If you missed it, see, Robert's just learning about this. He sees on social media that people are talking about it, but the details, I think, are very important here. It's right before Game 5 of the 97 Finals, and Michael said that he got hungry around 10:30 at night, Salt Lake City. Aaron, see how big Salt Lake City is, just in terms of population, even though I know that state's a little wonky. It's different than other states. And that's certainly a different city if you've ever been there. But 10:30 at night, Michael's trainer claims that they couldn't find any place open. No place open. How big Salt Lake City?
Lake City has an estimated population of 200,000.
200,000 people. So it's not one of the biggest cities, but it's a damn big city. According to Mike's trainer, in 1998, at 10:30 at night, nothing was open. Nothing. Like, they could not find a restaurant to get food other than a pizza joint in Salt Lake that they then ordered a pie from. And according to this trainer, five dudes showed up. Five dudes showed up to deliver the pizza. They're like trying to peek around whoever showed up at the door to see if Michael was in there. And then Michael got sick. He said he ate the whole pizza by himself. Never have I been more relatable, or Michael's never been more relatable than that moment where he houses an entire pizza by himself. He claims that's why he was sick in what we described for decades to be the flu game. So there's a lot to get to here. For one, how the hell did they know it was Michael Jordan ordering? Like, you think Michael Jordan is on the phone saying, yeah, I want a large pepperoni. Who's calling? It's Michael Jordan. He has five other people in the room who are ordering this for him. Like, it's not going to be Michael Jordan, who is on the name. Like, they're not going to say, hey, Michael, can I use your card? Like, they're not doing that. So that's number one. Number two, how do you poison a pizza? I mean, you got to think about it. If they're going to deliver that pizza on time, they're not expecting Michael Jordan to call. They don't have on the side, oh yeah, this is the bad cheese or the bad meat we're going to use in the event that Michael calls in for us to screw the Bulls because they're playing our beloved Jazz. So I don't know if you've ever worked in like a pizza joint or anything of that sort, Robert or Aaron, but how would you poison a pizza?
I have never worked in a pizza place, but I know with food poisoning, there are two main culprits. One is undercooked meat.
Yep.
And I think you would have to wonder that their toppings were already cooked at the point of they're going to make pizza. So I'm going to take meat out of the equation. And it's right. Pepperoni, so it's already a cured meat.
It would be very easy to notice if something was going on with the meat on the pizza. However, I've never received a pizza that I thought, yeah, I'm not going to eat this. Never has crossed my mind. I don't know what it would have to appear on the pizza for me to think I'm not going to eat this.
The secondary thing with food poisoning would be dairy. And there is cheese. So you're right. I don't think that they have a bag of bad cheese that they're like, oh, this is for with Michael Jordan's here. But we cannot discount what fan stands for. It's fanatic. And I'm not going to put this past the people.
How do they know it's Michael?
It's going to a hotel where they're staying on the outskirts of Salt Lake. And this isn't game one, right?
Also, the internet is not really full-fledged at that point.
Correct. But they know that he is in Salt Lake.
They know he's in Salt Lake. They know game five's the next night.
Exactly. So it's a big game. And then they get a call to this hotel that could be potentially, and there had to be a tip-off. Somebody's like, we're going here. We know it's for him. But we also listened to Adam Gold before we came on the air, and it talked about his teammates not waiting for Michael at dinner. So maybe it's Salt Lake City. So I'm sure word
gets around. Scotty Burrell told him. Scotty Burrell said, this guy's been bleeping with me all year long. Now we're going to mess with his pizza.
Maybe somebody that works at the restaurant overhears something from his Bulls teammates. Oh, they didn't wait for Michael. Oh, Michael's going to have to order a pizza. I know somebody that works at Scaladelli's Pizzeria.
I believe he's not lying. Let me say that front and center.
Okay.
But if he was, Michael might have just had too much to drink.
I don't know, man. I've never had a hangover that looked like that. That with the cold sweats all day. They said he got to the arena at 5 after sleeping all day. You would not be hungover after that. Like,
yes,
that
Aaron.
Hungover.
My biggest takeaway is this. How long has it been since the flu game?
It's been 22 years.
22 years.
23 years.
It's just now coming out that it was pizza. So Mike sat up.
I've heard rumors that it might have been pizza. This was confirmation.
He sat up and let the whole world just call it the flu game and praise it.
There are
for
shoes.
For 2 decades.
Named
they
after
are
this
shoes.
Game.
Flu game shoes. That's true.
He just capitalized on it for 2 decades.
Okay.
Like, oh, that's fine.
Which leads to the next thing. What do we call this game now? If it's not the flu game, we calling it pizza game?
No, I still got to call it the flu game.
We're not breaking out Pizzagate. We can't. We can't.
Yeah,
call
Pizzagate's this. Taken.
We can't. Somebody
That's
already
taken.
Has Pizzagate.
What's Pizzagate?
Oh man,
we are
Google
not talking about it.
Google
on
it
the
later.
Air.
Trust us.
Let me do this right now.
No, but still, do not talk about it on the
Don't
air.
Do it, Josh.
Whoa.
Yeah, Pizzagate is taken, and it is very
got
out
it.
There.
I just learned something. So Pizzagate's taken. Can't call it the pizza game. The food poisoning game?
Maybe it's just like the flued game. I don't know.
You got to stick with flu game.
I feel, yeah.
You just got to stick with it.
We lied, and history is written by the victors. And you know what? It's Michael's history. And it seems like he's written the rest of this pretty damn well, so I'm just going to leave flu game to him.
They also covered Rodman leaving the 98 finals to join NWO.
Legend.
Not telling the Bulls. Not telling Phil Jackson. So Phil Jackson, there's the great clip at practice. Hey, where's Scotty? Or not Scotty, where's Dennis? I don't know. Well, where do you think he's at? I don't know. I haven't talked to him. And then he just appears on, I don't know what event it was. Do you know what event it was? It's like the bash, like the beach bash or something?
It was WCW's Monday Night Nitro.
Yes.
Monday Night Nitro. And... man, I forgot how bad Hogan looked and NWA.
Oh,
or
man.
NWL.
He was
totally
not,
different thing.
He did not have extra attitude. He was
no, he did not.
It was the New World
it's
Order.
The New World Order. Yeah.
What do you, the pay-per-view you're talking about is Bash at the Beach. But what was so bad about Hogan? Were you mad at his over spray tan and
yeah.
his saggy, muscly
the
arms?
Black, the black 5 o'clock shadow,
that's
I think,
classic.
Turned me off.
Oh, Hollywood man. Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
I didn't like Hollywood Hogan.
Bad guy.
Well, remember when Antonio Brown did Hollywood Hogan last year?
And he went with the blonde mustache?
That was unfortunate.
I do remember that.
Very unfortunate that he went Hollywood Hogan during that time. But if you go back and watch this, what's great is I don't think Rodman was that great of a wrestler.
Not at all.
And I don't think he was that great of a teammate either because he was really hammering some dude with the chair. Like, it seemed like the part where you're supposed to make it look like you're hitting him with the chair without actually crushing this dude with the chair, Dennis Rodman didn't seem to follow protocol.
No, and there's actually a story about this. They're teaching Dennis how to hit someone with a chair. I don't know if they talked about this in the documentary.
They did not.
They're teaching Dennis how to crack brother with this chair, and he goes to show him. He's like, look, you want to hit me in the flat of the back with the middle of the chair so it makes the most sound and it's the most surface area.
Right.
And Dennis goes to swing it. He said, just swing at 50% power and just try to hit me in this area. Dennis does not, and he swings 100% and catches him with the end of the chair. And I think it was DDP who ends up getting hit with his chair, but he said he felt like his kidneys were bleeding. He hit him in the lower back. They were so worried that Dennis was not going to be able to do this on air, and he hit him with the chair, hard as hell, but at least he hit him in the right spot.
When Dennis returned, you see this PR staffer saying, here's what we're going to try and do. There are 300 media members waiting beyond this door over here. We're going to try and sneak him out the back. And he's just going to start. So they get him through this back alley, and then a couple photographers see him, and Dennis is in a full sprint, and you see TV people with cameras trying to run him down as if you're going to hawk down Dennis Rodman while wielding this massive camera.
Only
but
cops,
also, it's such
cameraman.
A it's also such a PR move. Like, I bet you the PR director said to the media, I don't know, man. I didn't see him. I didn't see him go anywhere. He just kind of got away from us. That's what we're led to believe when we go into like the Panthers locker room. And we all want to talk to whoever, Thomas Davis, or want to talk to DJ Moore. Like, I think he had a big fumble that we wanted to hear what he had to say about it. And then we walk in there, DJ Moore's not there. And then we're like, where's DJ Moore? Oh, man, he must have just left.
Oh, he must be kidnapped.
Right, he just might.
We need to get a search party out. DJ's not here?
DJ's not here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I could never be in PR. I just could never be it. I could never be in that job. Gosh, we also need to get to this Kentucky cheerleading story.
Oh, my. Do you want to?
I do.
Okay, cool.
I do. I mean, it has nothing to do with us.
Your tweet earlier today really hit the nail on the head.
So the University of Kentucky fires all four of its cheerleading coaches for failing to provide reasonable oversight. This is what they said in the release. During off-campus events where inappropriate conduct by members of the cheerleading squad, including hazing activities, alcohol use, and public nudity. Wake Forest cheerleaders would never. Yeah. Why would you leave a place such as Wake Forest to go to a place with cheerleaders like Kentucky?
Mm.
Makes
no sense.
I don't think we have any banjo music lined up. We're not doing that right now.
I can
just
get
not
it.
What we're gonna do. Apparently the Bluegrass State does not like bluegrass.
Who knew?
I do. But, yeah, Wake cheerleaders would never. You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals making up Sports Hub Triad.
And now, on with the show.
Showtime.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Now being joined by Adam Amin of Fox Sports, a Chicagoan, also a huge fan of the NC Dinos, who have been representing our state, even though we understand that they are named after the NC Soft video game company
not the state of North Carolina. That hasn't stopped us each and every day updating what's happening with our beloved Dinos. But before we get to that, we have to start with The Last Dance, Adam. Episodes 9 and 10 were yesterday. You hear Michael at the end of the documentary saying, if me and Phil are back, we would find a way to get Scotty back. We'd find a way to get Rodman back. Kerr would be back. And we would try to take a run at winning a seventh straight title. Understanding that there was a lockout season that next year and that the Lakers weren't quite there yet and the Spurs, they were going on to win their first title. What do you think would happen if the Bulls did run it back and tried with everybody intact, as Michael said would happen, if they did, in fact, try to pursue that seventh title?
Yeah, I'll start here. I don't think everybody would have come back. And I know MJ is convinced of it, and that's part of the reason for his greatness is his voracious belief in whatever he believes the case would have been. I understand that. But I don't think it would have ever come to fruition. Again, Scotty, you saw Scotty was exhausted. He was at the end of his line. He was very, significantly underpaid considering his value. He valued long-term security. I think he wanted the deal done. Phil could have come back. MJ could have come back. I don't think any of the other guys would have been back with him. I think Reinsdorf did make a good point where there was just too much salary to try to pay after those guys' market value was going to skyrocket based on what they had done, in particular a guy like Steve Kerr. And I would say that the rest of the league, and I know you said it right, Josh, shortened season, obviously, with the lockout, but that was a San Antonio team that was exuberant, youthful, Tim Duncan coming into his own in his early seasons. That was a very good San Antonio team. That Knicks team I thought was very good that got to the finals that year as well. I think they would have had something to say about it. And I just feel like the lack of gas in the tank was so obvious during those last moments of The Last Dance. I just don't know if they would have had it in them even with a shortened season. That being said, if they do get all those guys back, I think they're competitive. I think they're one of the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, probably one of the three best. But I think the Knicks in Indiana would have had something to say about it. And I think the emotional buildup to what ended up being the end of the run was too much. Phil mentioned it a little bit last night in the final episode where he said, that you could have gone 82-0. When you're told you could go 82-0 and you're not coming back, and that's told to you at the beginning of the year, and I can see why Jordan was upset that was said that early instead of waiting to see what happened, you build yourself up emotionally for that end to come. And when it comes, you are at peace. And I think Phil Jackson, in his state of mind, being a very zen-like person, I think he would have, I don't know if he would have come back, and clearly he didn't. And the rest is history.
What did you learn about Michael in this series that you had not known before?
Obviously, the nuances about the Atlantic City trip, the emotional impact, the physical and emotional impact that the game of basketball had on him, the toll that it took on him, especially at the end of each of the three-peats. Like, people who go around saying, well, the Bulls would have won 8 in a row, I don't believe that. I think they would have won 6. I think they could have still won 6 in a certain amount of time, but you could see the toll that it had taken on MJ, and I would imagine a lot of the other guys, to put that much into it. And there's a reason he needed to step away, and obviously the emotional aspect of his father had a big role to play in that as well. I don't think I understood how voracious a competitor he was. And we had heard every story, and I knew about all the slights. I knew the George Karl story. I knew, everything involving Malone and Barkley and Payton talking smack. And I knew a lot of the headlines and treetops of this, as did a lot of people in Chicago media and I imagine around the country. But I didn't realize to the level and to the degree that he took this voracious competitive fire that was within him and how he harnessed that. I don't think I understood what a madman he truly was until watching him.
And to hold you up, I mean, didn't the conviction in which he spoke about it, like how comfortable he was with everything he did, make you think, wow, not only is everything we heard true, but he isn't even ashamed of it at all?
No, not at all. And And you saw how emotional he was at the end of, I think, episode 7.
Yeah.
You know, that incredible 2.5-minute sequence where he dives into the psychology of why he is the way he is. You don't want to play that way? Don't play that way, but this is how I am built. And to lean into that as much as he did, I think that even played all the way through the sixth title when Phil, you know, they showed, you know, that little private conversation. Phil saying, can you believe this? And Mike says, yeah, I can believe it. I never stopped believing. I knew we were going to have it. In Phil Jackson's book, 11 Rings, there's this wonderful excerpt about the last shot. And Jackson just says, I thought he had already put his greatest performance behind him in the flu game, you know, and what turned out to be the food poisoning game. You know, the flu game, I thought he had put together his greatest performance, but that sequence of, you know, the layup, the steal, the shot, and the hold for the final 5 seconds, you just had an understanding that he had this will, this mental toughness that I don't think you see widespread anymore, because for good reason, I think the relationships in the NBA are far closer than they ever have been. And you could see how much, you know, I know Jordan telling Larry Bird, F you, you know, after they beat him in game 7 and that savage moment. Yeah, but there's still a respect there. There's a love there. And there's an appreciation for one another. Jordan felt that with Magic Johnson. Like those guys are friends. There's no denying the friendships that have been created through the Dream Team and all of that. But I think the level of friendliness in today's game, which I have no issue with really, does not leave a lot of room for the level of hatred and competitive spirit that we saw in a lot of these series in the 90s, yeah. Especially 90s basketball at its finest, we felt.
He's on Twitter at Adam Amin from Fox Sports. Okay. How, as somebody who is a connoisseur of all things pizza, how skeptical are you about this story? Hey, Salt Lake City, 10:30, there's nothing else open other than this pizza joint, and they know it's Michael Jordan's room, or have reason to believe it's Michael Jordan's room, so they poison it with 5 dudes, even though another book says that it was actually 3 people. Regardless, it's a sketchy circumstance in that regard as well. Also, what would it take to poison a pizza as well? Are you skeptical about this at all?
I am, because the 5 dudes thing, and listen, I can see a circumstance where there are guys at this pizza place that maybe may or may not have been open late at night in Salt Lake City, and they go, hey, I think this might be like one of the Bulls. Maybe we should, like, how cool would that be if it's one of the Bulls? Let's go drop all, and all these guys go together. I can see the kind of puzzle pieces and chess moves that might actually fit for that particular portion of the story. Cause I listen, if I'm some guy in Salt Lake City, who's got an opportunity to hang out with literally the icon of icons at that point, this guy is a global icon. That would be like, if hey, LeBron James is ordering sushi from this place in Orlando tonight, I have reason to believe LeBron's ordering food. Let's go see if that's him.
There's no chance that his name's on the order, though, right? 0% chance.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, how? Like, there have to be a lot of steps here to jump to that conclusion that some guys were poisoning the pizza. Here's the thing, too. I understand that this, in the sense of the word that we kind of know it as, this is not necessarily a true documentary, so to speak, right? This is a documentary in the sense that it is a document of some sports history. This is, to me, it's a piece of sports memorabilia. I understand who's cultivating and who's crafting the stories and images. So naturally, this is one of the few times that I'm actually skeptical of the perception of the event. So I believe that it could have happened. I also believe you can eat a whole personal pizza or a whole pizza by yourself at 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night, because I probably have done that a significant number of times in my life at this point.
Adam Amin with us here. We need to get to a lot of the important stuff. Let's get to the most sports radio way I can ask you this question. Who's better, 96 Bulls or 2020 NC Dinos?
In terms of winning percentage, I feel like the Dinos are second to none right now with their 10-1.
But,
it's incredible. And big series, you know, six in a row, two consecutive sweeps. Lone blemish was a bad pitching performance where they gave up a big lead to LG, and that's all well and good. You get Doosan this week, starting tomorrow on, I believe, on ESPN or ESPN2.
We hate Doosan. The Doosan Bears, yeah. Oh my gosh, they're the worst.
The defending KBO champ.
Oh.
They're like the Yankees, it feels like, or maybe the Kia Tigers or the Yankees of KBO. But it's like, yeah, nobody likes Doosan. Yeah, nobody wants to be a Doosan fan. I'd much rather hang out with a Lotte Giants fan than a Doosan Bears fan. But big series starting up tomorrow. I think at 4:30 a.m. it's going to be on TV, Dinos and Bears. And I think I'll be part of the broadcast. I'll be jumping on as a fan of the Dinos. It's been fun, man. Like, this feels a little bit like what it was like when we were kids. And you'd play a video game, or you'd see the mascot on TV, and you'd go, oh, that's fun. I want to know more about this, or I'll be a fan of that team. That's basically what happened. I saw a picture of Siri and Dandy, the two dinosaur mascots, in particular Siri, who is known as Swole Daddy.
Swole Daddy.
Great mascot. And I was like, well, that's hilarious. Let's learn more about the Dinos. You learn they're the second youngest team. They've made some improvements in the last 2 years. Maybe they're the team I can latch onto. And here they are at a magical 10-1 start to their season. It's incredible.
NC Dinos, we're all behind them. You got a North Carolina native who went to East Carolina and Mike Wright on the roster. I'm an Orioles fan. He pitched for the Orioles as well. It's a picture-perfect fit. We have a guy on the show who's a big video game nerd as well. So everything's perfect when it comes to the NC Dinos. How much more optimistic have you become watching how South Korea has handled this, and specifically the KBO, with what is possible to happen sometime soon with Major League Baseball?
Yeah, it's a great blueprint. It's a very good, very interesting blueprint. And I certainly feel like there is reason for optimism if you can get to the point where everybody feels fairly safe and comfortable in the setting that they're going to have to be in for X amount of time. Like, the one part about it here in America is we're having some trouble navigating as to what course of action to take. Again, I understand all the differences between the two countries. The South Korean testing has been impressive over the last 2 months compared to what we've had. We've had a little bit of a slow go at it here in America. But if you can get to that point where testing is frequent and readily available, and you get to a point where you feel that there's a large enough portion of the players and coaches, for that matter, especially those who are a little bit older and maybe susceptible to COVID-19 or something along those lines, if you can get to a point where a good chunk, good majority, you know, 9 out of 10 guys feel comfortable going into that setting, then yeah, there is reason for optimism. But I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of dissent, and this, listen, I'm not an authority. I'm not an epidemiologist, nor are most of us. So none of us should be pretending that we're authorities on this. But I do feel like it's going to take some semblance of a medical breakthrough for a lot more people to feel comfortable. I do have faith and confidence that will happen sooner rather than later, because I just feel like everybody, not just in this country, but around the world, is like putting all their resources to figuring this out. And I have trust and faith in human ingenuity. So there are certainly bright spots. There's a lot of positive news to lean on. I do think that it's going to take a little bit more than the information that we currently have at our fingertips. It's going to take a little bit more knowledge and a little bit more data that comforts people before everybody feels comfortable going back into some of these settings.
Adam Amin, that's a very serious answer. That's way above where our show's been. We've been in the sewer the last 20 to 25 minutes because in discussing, I don't know how we ended up talking about Richard Jefferson. I'd like to think it had something to do with The Last Dance. And then me struggling to get the Richard Jefferson's name just had everybody on the show listing off Jeffersons. So then we got to a place, who's the best Jefferson? And somehow it's Thomas Jefferson being discussed against George Jefferson. So I ask Adam Amin, the foremost authority on all things, period. Thomas Jefferson, George Jefferson, who you got?
I mean, impact on the state of Virginia, advantage goes to Thomas Jefferson. I feel like impact on the New York City housing market has a lot more to do with George Jefferson. Here's the thing too. I saw a photo, and Bulls Archives on Instagram does a fantastic job with pulling up these old photos, and obviously during the Last Dance, they've been on point with shots of, you know, Oprah and Macaulay Culkin, Bill Murray, and Billy Crystal, all these celebrities at these Bulls games in the 90s, Drew Barrymore. And I saw they had a photo, what seemingly looked like Sherman Hemsley singing the national anthem at a Bulls game. And for the life of me, I can't find this video, and I desperately want to know if that is what happened. Because if that's what happened, I don't think it's even close. George Jefferson, Sherman Hemsley, wins this by a long shot.
We need to find this. Aaron has not been paying attention to anything the last 20 minutes, and his ears just perked up, and he's dived headfirst into his laptop. He's trying to figure out if George Jefferson did, in fact, sing the national anthem at a Bulls game. It's amazing. Anyway, I just appreciate Jason Hare and everything that the last month has been. As a Chicagoan, I'm sure you've loved it as well. Appreciate you spending the time, Adam. Congratulations on the new gig as well. It's appreciated that you spend the time.
No worries, guys. Appreciate it. Hopefully this means some trips to Charlotte in the near future and crossing some more paths more often.
I'll save you a plate of barbecue. Looking forward
Sounds
to
like
it.
A plan.
There you go.
Absolutely.
That's Adam Amin, Fox Sports, spending here the time. You got to have multiple categories here. So I put out a poll. The poll is out, Robert. Who's the best Jefferson? I forgot one. I forgot a major Jefferson that needs to be included. Jefferson Pilot. ACC fans, those who know, Jefferson Pilot needs to be there.
I mean, if we're just making it their first name now, you're going to have to add Jefferson Starship. Jefferson Airplane.
Okay.
You're going to have to add so much stuff.
It's there, but like I've narrowed it down to four. We got, or three. George Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, Jefferson Pilot, other. That's it. That's where it's at.
Has the other ever won a poll?
You know, it has actually. I think we did this like when we had the Wake basketball search down to eight.
Who would you rather date? Robert, Josh, other. Other would probably win.
I'd say other probably would win that. But most famous Jefferson. Actually, that's a different conversation. It's not most famous. Who is the most famous Jefferson? Is it George Jefferson or Thomas Jefferson?
I don't know. You would think Thomas Jefferson, but that's being ignorant based on because we're in the Americas. Like, I would say worldwide, I would have to know how much the Jeffersons did numbers in other countries.
I mean, Thomas Jefferson is on a dollar bill.
He's on a $2 bill. There's a saying about
what
$2
bill,
bills.
What like, dollar bill is George Jefferson on? I think I'm voting Thomas Jefferson here.
I will not be. Have you voted from Sports Hub Triads Trivia Twitter yet?
I have not.
Okay.
You want to?
I won't have to do it.
You want to vote? Are you going to vote for George Jefferson? With the Sports Hub Triads Twitter?
It has already been voted on, but they voted George Jefferson. So I
who's
I guess,
they?
I guess
it had to be you.
I have been in here doing that, I promise you, because I just went and looked. Why would I set up this whole elaborate ruse just to be like, oh, someone's
where's
already
Sawyer
done
at?
It?
Where's Sawyer at?
It's either Sawyer or Jenny.
Good job, Jenny. Good job.
Appreciate it, Jenny. I don't care, as long as it's for George. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Getting some Jefferson Airplane votes in here. People want some love for Jefferson Airplane. There are a lot of things from the doc we didn't even get time. We didn't have time to get to, so perhaps we could save it for tomorrow. Reggie Miller. There's a lot to talk about with Reggie. Michael Jordan and his piano. That is something we need to spend some time on. Michael Jordan on the piano. Time needs to be devoted there. Robert, what do you got in Take It to the House?
How do you cheddar bob yourself during a quarantine?
Cheddar bob the verb. All right, that's next.